Any problem?
I think you answered this morning, but I missed it. Is any experiencing possible outside of consciousness?
Is it? Is there?
I don't think so, but I...
No. First of all, I don't think so. Even that has to be.
Yeah.
Is any experiencing at all possible outside of consciousness? Or if no experiencing is possible outside of consciousness, is any experiencing other than consciousness?
No.
Then why do we call it by other names?
Do we? I mean, I
yeah, but yeah. But we call something pain, something else we call pleasure, something we call fear,
I see.
Something else we call anxiety, courage, something we call love, something else we call hate. And in all these, I've been using the word else. Is there anything other than?
Yes. There is just consciousness.
There is only experiencing. Whether it you experience, that experience is known as pleasure or pain. It's pure experience. And as long as there is pure experiencing, it's consciousness. Kissing and biting both involve the teeth and the lips and so on. Why call one thing and the other the other? That's the idea. That's the basic idea.
Yeah.
So, what the reality in that the reality in fear is experiencing, which is consciousness. And therefore, fear is unreal. Fear is unreal not in the sense of I don't accept fear, I accept courage. No. One who does not accept fear does not accept courage. That is the most dangerous part of this perception. One who does not accept hate does not accept love. One who does not accept pain does not accept pleasure. And therefore is not bound at all. There is nothing binding. And therefore is not also caught up in thou shalt and thou shalt not. Thou shalt and thou shalt not immediately generates in you, I will not. Right? Depending upon how we relate to each other. You tell me, Swami, you must do this. And if I relate well to you, I say yes, I will do it. And if not, I say no, I will not. In the same way, you tell me, Swami, you should not do this. And again, my response is, I will not do it, all right. Or I will do it. Who are you to tell me? So, when we see all these are pure experiencing and nothing but consciousness, the other words being unreal. Unreal, imaginary, arbitrary, maybe necessary. If you look at a world map, they say this is Atlantic Ocean, this is Pacific Ocean, this is some other ocean, Indian Ocean. And some people even tell you exactly the spot of where Indian Ocean and Atlantic Ocean meet. And yet, we use names, we use labels. They say it's for administrative convenience. It's an expedience. Yeah, as long as you feel that it's merely an expedient, it is not true. It is an expedient. In Vedanta, it is called Vyavaharika Satta. It is not true. But for the sake of communication, for the sake of instruction, as our friend Vasishtha would put it, for the sake of instruction, we use one word for this. Sukham for something and Dukham for something else. Both of them meaning the space around you, the state of the space around you. So, as long as we are quite clear in that, in our own mind, in our own consciousness, that this is pure consciousness and this is pure experiencing. Why am I calling this fear? for no obvious apparent reason, just to communicate with her what is happening in me. And it is from that point of view that what the limitation or the characterization is unreal. Experiencing, being experiencing and not nothing else, and the experiencing being non-different from consciousness. A thought is non-different from consciousness, whether you call it a good thought or a bad thought. But for the sake of communication, for the sake of instruction, as a measure of expediency, I call one a good thought, the other a bad thought. I call one pleasure, the other experience being called pain. But in themselves they are unreal. Not unreal in the sense of something that doesn't exist at all, but it exists. I am not tracing it to its own sorupa. Sorupa meaning its own form. It's not form. What in truth it is, I am not tracing this particular thought, this particular concept or notion or emotion or experience. I am not taking it to its sorupa, its own essential nature. I am giving it a label. The label was necessary as an experience. But I have elevated that to the status of truth. It's not true. Fear is not true.
Expedient to what end, if none of the ends are real either?
Yeah, exactly. That is the whole question. That's my question.
It's just...
you can answer it.
It's just a game.
Right. Exactly. Correct. Correct. Absolutely correct. When the Swami was swimming and he got drowned, you merely want to say whether it is on the Nelson side or Balfour side. Or, you know, this side. Kudni side or Balfour side. That's all. He is still drowned and dead. But when you discuss it with somebody else, you sound knowledgeable if you say, we drowned somewhere near the Balfour ferry landing. As though it mattered very much if he drowned there and not here. That is the whole battle of yoga. There is no need to abolish these labels. Let them be there. That is, even the most enlightened person is still going to look at that and call it lake. He is still going to say, oh, look at those lovely ripples on the surface of the lake. It is not that he will look at it and see mountain. Mountain on top and mountain below and mountain in the sky. No. He knows that is water and that is lake and that is mountain. But he does not take that to be an independent reality. The ripple or the wave on the surface of the lake is not an independent reality. It is lake. There are not two things or several things there. One being the lake and the other being all those ripples and waves. The ripples and waves and the water and the all together constitute one wave, one lake or one reservoir of water. But we seem to cling to one particular thing as though it is the absolute reality. Fear being the absolute reality. Pain being the absolute reality. Pleasure being the absolute reality. Absolute and totally different from something else. I don't know if we can find, as you said, the goal or the end which the experience serve. But I can tell you the other one. Once you know that essentially, pleasure and pain are experiencing, which means consciousness. You do not value one above the other. In pain you cry and in pleasure you smile. You don't go hunting after the one and rejecting the other, running away from the other. When you don't do that, you come on an even keel. And the body begins to respond as it needs to. Neither saying I will now, nor saying I will not. Right? In the same way, in your relationship, when you say, oh, I love you. That love being non-different from consciousness. It's pure consciousness, it's nothing else. I love you is an expression, it's a nice expression. And it is possible for this consciousness to also manifest what I might later call I hate you. What is the difference spelling? What is the difference between I love you and I hate you? Love and hate? The spelling is different, very different. Except the E is the same, I think.
The E stands for equal.
Equal. E is equal.
But love can break out of the spiral.
I'm not sure.
And hate can.
No, that you're talking about the other love, unfortunately.
Oh, I thought you said this was the same. I'm sorry.
No, it is the same. The love that we use in ordinary human relationship, I love you today, means I hated you yesterday, and I'm going to do so again. That sort of thing. That love being non-different from the content of that emotion or sentiment being only thought and consciousness, it can change. It's subject to change.
But while it's there, it can...
Yeah.
While it's there, it can do nothing. While it's there, it's waiting for the change. And in exactly the same way, you may turn around and say, I hate you. It's the same thing. That hate, the content of that hate being consciousness, that is true, that consciousness is true. And that which has, which apparently appears to be hate, is untrue. It's not true. What is hate minus that experiencing, the emotion, which is again consciousness? The chittam. I hate you. Right? Now, some emotion is building up. And I become aware of that emotion. And I am asking myself, what is this? What is the content of this emotion? What is it made of? The same consciousness, the same intelligence, the same mind, the same heart, the chittam. Has that chittam really undergone a change called hate? No. That is, when there is a big wave in the lake, has the lake become something else? So, when there is this emotion of hate, has the intelligence, has the consciousness, has the mind, or the heart undergone a real change? It's still the same heart, it's still the same mind, it's still the same consciousness.
True, but not true. When we were doing bhakti, you said that...
No, please don't. We are in a different...
Well, you know, I can't do that. I mean, I'd like to integrate the whole...
Yeah, we'll integrate the whole thing.
Well, will you do it after I'm gone?
No, come on. Yeah, what's the...
You said that love, when you were talking about bhakti, can break through the shield.
I told you that bhakti love is different.
Yeah. It's a different kind of love.
No, it's totally different. It's not a different kind. It's kind, not different. That is, consciousness in itself, when it functions, that is what it's called bhakti. That oneness.
Yes.
That love is the expression of the oneness. When you stand in the lake and push the water away with both your hands, the fondness or the affection or the eagerness with which both these come back, that is love. That is a different kind of love.
That's the same consciousness you've been talking about today, though.
Yeah.
I wish there were another word for it. Consciousness is a
That's
very
what
dull,
I say.
Boring
unfortunately,
word.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we can use any other word, but we'll get caught.
Yeah.
We can use the word intelligence. We can use the word mind. We can use the word heart. But then all these words have been loaded with something or other in our own communication. We can use the word Atma. But then the moment we use the word Atma, you think that's a lovely little deity sitting in your heart and you can meditate upon the Atma. That's why it's important to, we can even use different words, but all the time come back to this single point. What is the content of this? What exactly is it in reality, the truth? If I do not use the word love, if I do not use the word hate, if I do not know how to distinguish between one from the other, what exactly is it made of? Pure consciousness, nothing else. There is nothing else.
Do yogis have difficulty sometimes remembering the names of things?
Why? What for?
Sometimes I'm in a state of mind whereby nothing seems to have a name, and well, it's probably just a bizarre.
It's passing.
Word.
Yeah.
Passing. And it all seems the same and quite indifferent.
Yeah, that's a the Zen people have got a lovely answer for that. First, you see the tree. There's a tree. It's nothing but my mental projection. When that grips you, it's not a tree anymore, it's a void. And it becomes a tree again. Start seeing a tree, in between you don't see the tree, you see it as pure consciousness. Mm-hmm. And then it comes back, tree as consciousness, consciousness as tree.
Yeah, but one can go in and out, it's not a kind of normal.
It's quite normal.
Okay.
Quite gloriously normal.
When you're doing some business and it happens, it isn't.
Oh, sometimes when you are tired, you can fall asleep counting money. why? nothing to be sorry, excited about. Sorry about. These things can happen. Yeah. You suddenly begin to wonder what am I doing here?
duality and the oneness, and I sort of am trying to realize oneness in all things. And then you were saying before about how the oneness, in order to experience it, its oneness, becomes more than one. And then I thought, well, is that like a constant thing, that it's always the two?
No, first of all, you see, we were discussing the thing called duality and the other thing called oneness. That's already two.
Yeah. So,
The other thing is merely a concept, a sort of theology or philosophy, whatever you wish to call it. That is, one became many. Again, that's the bhakti philosophy. Why are we here? Why is all this diversity here? Then they say, no, it was one, because it hurts the intelligence to see all this, and yet these are all one.
Yeah.
And again, if you are going to be told all the time, you must avoid bad company, and you must cling to good company, you must do this and you must not do that. If the whole thing is one, why must I avoid that and why must I cling to this? Why must I not go to a beer hall and why must I go to a church? If everything is one. And bhakti starts, emphasizes this all the time, that you must avoid the evil and cling to good. And so, diversity has to be accepted for the time being. And then when you ask, how did this come into being? Then they say that God wanted to experience, realize his own potentiality. And so manifested all this. God self-realization became the word. All that is mere explanation. You understand me?
Yeah.
All that is mere expediency. Again, expediency in communication or instruction. But then, all right, you have understood all that. Now, what is the truth? They are again going to say it's all God.
Mm-hmm.
Why does the diversity exist? It's not for you to ask. It's not relevant to your personal life at all. That's God's business. Eventually, even if you are a pure bhakta, even you are supposed to realize God's omnipresence.
Well, what can my attitude be toward cruelty in the world? If I think about it, if I dwell on it, such as cruelty to animals, then I suffer pain. And that, I guess, is because I'm making that apart from myself, and I don't want to accept it as true. But then if I accept it and suffer the pain, what good is that going to do? This is my problem. It's not going to do those animals any good unless I start lobbying. So, I just don't quite know what my attitude, what I want to make become my attitude to that sort of thing.
Kindness to animals, yeah?
Yes, cruelty to animals.
Cruelty to animals.
Uh-huh.
What are animals? Me? Dog.
Dog.
Not me?
Not a human.
Why not?
Well, I was using it as an example.
So if I am beating the dog, what would you do? You would beat me and stop me from beating the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? What about me, animal? I'm also animal.
Well, I wouldn't if it were you doing it, but if somebody else was doing
it. Right. Now we are in further trouble. So you see me beating the dog. Out of full of sympathy for the dog, prevent cruelty to animals. You look at me. If it was not the Swami, somebody else, you would have bet him. Which means the cruelty has been transferred from the dog to the man. And now that, since it is the Swami that is beating the dog, you want to save the dog from being beaten.
How to stop?
But you cannot stop the Swami from beating the dog because the Swami is a respectable person. And so you beat yourself.
Right, I feel powerless. Right. I can't do anything.
You feel powerless, and so you are beating yourself, and you go shivering into bed. At what stage is there no cruelty in this?